You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 71, Michael Piller's Magic Show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a new world record for costumes, the TNG Season 2 theatrical event, typographic art prints, Trek tones for your iOS device, and we debate which series would make the best movies. Then in the feature, we're joined by Mike and Max of Commentary Track Stars to discuss the DS9 episode Equilibrium. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week? Oh, wait, Greg. Now, you didn't tell me you were having a sex change operation. What's going on here?
That's right, Chris, I did. How's it going today? How's the weather in Japan?
It's nice. You know, it's cooling off. It's really nice. But hold on, this is just throwing me off. Now, look, if you were going to have this operation, the least you could have done is to shave your beard, because that's just weird.
I have to wait for the hormones to kick in. They've only done a few things. It's going to take time.
Oh, God. Now, Dr. Crusher isn't treating you, is she?
Oh, shit.
Okay.
I can't keep this up.
So, Char, that is your impression of Greg as a woman. Is that...
It's got a hint of Michael Jackson, but I guess so. I don't know, buddy.
Oh, man. All right. How are you, Char?
I'm good, I think. How are you doing?
Doing okay here. So, yes, as everyone should know from last week's show, Greg is not with us this week. He is still on his mission to the Breen homeworld, and he'll be back next week. So sitting in for Greg this week is our managing editor, Mistress Charlene Schmidt.
Yes, I am glad to be here. I get to do the news for the very first time. I am excited.
And as your screen name says today, you are Charlene Pool Girl Schmidt.
Yes, in reference to our feature, which I'm sure we will discuss at some length.
I hope so. Otherwise, it'll be a really bad show.
Yeah, I hope we discuss the feature for about an hour.
About an hour, yes.
Yeah, I was referring specifically to the pool girl reference.
Right, the creepy pool guy in the case of the episode, right? Who?
Right.
Wow, I have a few things about him in my notes. But anyway, before we get into the feature, which will come later, why don't we take a look at the news? And before we do that, seriously, how is everything in Fargo these days? Is it as cold there as I think it is in October?
You know what? Lately, yeah, it's living up to expectations. We got what I would consider our first real snow last night, meaning it accumulated and it stuck to the ground and was around the next morning. So that cold Canadian air is descending upon us, and here we go, winter. I'm not ready.
So when it snows like that, do you go out in the yard and make, like, snow tribbles? And, you know, I personally would like to make a snow morn. I'd like to do the whole bar and have a snow morn sitting there because, you know, just like the real morn on camera, it would be accurate because he wouldn't be saying anything.
Right, yeah. It would be incredibly lifelike because he would just be sitting there. And no, unfortunately, tribbles really, even at this point, are still just a little off the mark yet. It's not quite that good. As the season goes on, I'm sure we'll have enough snow to make the whole bar eventually. It hit me up on that idea in January, and I'll see what I can do.
Now, do you think you can get Ben from Lower Decks to come and actually work the bar? Because I think he would really be into serving ice drinks in your front yard.
You know, I'll see what I can do. I think that would be a very nice idea. We could get all the neighbors to come out and hang out at the bar. And he can bring us, what was it that Riker was drinking? last
in our
discussion.
Trachean ale, I believe it was.
Yeah, that was like it. That. Trachean ale. Yeah, he can bring us all trachean ale. We can sit by Morn at the ice table and just chill. Literally.
I think it'd be cool because, you know, Ben, you know, he would get really tight with all your neighbors. They'll be walking down the street. They'll be like, hey, Will, where are you going to work? Well,
Actually, the joke is we have a lot of neighbors named Steve. So it'd be, hey, Steve, what up, brother? Yeah. How's day in the office? Yeah. Stressful? I just have to serve drinks.
Is this like the Monty Python sketch with all the Bruces? This is Steve. This is Steve. This is Steve. Is your name not Steve? No, it's John. You mind if we call you Steve to keep it straight?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, it's a whole neighborhood full of Steves. And me and Patrick.
Call it Steveville.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into news. And unfortunately, we have to start news off on a somewhat sad note this week.
Yes, we do.
After we've pepped everyone up with our Ben's Bar talk. We just found out this week that in September, actually, Winrich Kolbe passed away. And for those who don't recognize his name, which I think most Star Trek fans will, Winrich Kolbe was a very prolific and important director on all of the modern Star Trek series.
Yeah, absolutely. He directed a lot of Star Trek episodes. Through TNG to Voyager, and then he did one Enterprise, too.
He did one Enterprise, yeah. Altogether, he directed 48 episodes of Star Trek, which is kind of astonishing for one person.
Yeah.
For TNG, he did two of the all-time great TNG episodes, Darmok and the finale, All Good Things. Of course, he did many others, but I mean, those are two key episodes that really encapsulate the Next Generation and the philosophy of TNG for me.
Yeah, absolutely. All Good Things. I think that is one of the best finales that's been done ever. It's a fantastic episode. But then he's also done things like the Voyager pilot. He directed Caretaker. And then Scorpion Part 2. He's done some DS9 as well. I mean, a lot of really important episodes that we remember and think highly of.
Absolutely. And it's really sad that, you know, Greg and I have talked about this before, that we seem to be, and I guess it's not now, it's always, it just is hitting us now. We seem to be in a time where we're losing so many of the creative minds behind Star Trek, especially those who worked on the original series and on the Next Generation. It just seems that over the past year, we have had these moments here where we're remembering someone like Winrich Kolbe over and over. And I don't know how I feel about it. Just I kind of feel, because in terms of television, Star Trek, you know, we're kind of in a slump these days. We're kind of in a slump. There's no series on TV. But we do have a resurgence on Blu-ray and with Netflix and such. But I don't know.
Right. I think I know what you're saying, though, Chris. I mean, there's not a whole lot of new material coming out. We've got the movies, but that is it. It's not like it was in the 90s when we had two series going on and movies. And so, yeah, I think there has been a lot of loss. And when it happens, I think it hits us harder because we don't have a new injection of new people coming in with their creative minds. And so another one gone. Okay, yeah, now what? And the thing with Kolbe is he really wasn't that old. He was 71, but apparently he had been ill for several years. And so that's sad.
It is, especially when someone like that passes away so young. And I think today 71 is definitely a young age to be passing away. And now he had retired from directing back in 2003. Like you said, he had been ill, so maybe some of the reason for that.
Maybe.
But prior to that, he had served as the professor of film and television at the Savannah College of Art and Design in Georgia. So he had continued to mentor, you know, a new generation of directors and creatives. So
Yeah.
It's sad to see him go. We'll certainly miss him. And we thank him for all of his hard work and creative genius over the years, you know, on all the Star Trek series that we love. All right, Char, well, let's move on into some more upbeat news. And everyone knows that the big destination Star Trek Stratford-upon-Avon concluded a little over a week ago. It was a huge event. I do hear that Alan Ruckman as Captain Harriman was the headliner after all, and they did somehow manage to coax Chief Argyle out of the Jefferies tubes long enough for him to do a little presentation on the stage, which surprisingly was not about Star Trek, but rather how to distill gin.
Oh, okay. I'm just shocked at the mere fact that he came out of the Jefferies tube.
Right?
What? Harriman coaxed Argyle out?
Oh, yeah, he did. That's the amazing thing. You know, Picard can't get him out. Yeah. Riker can't get him out. I mean, even Ensign Leffler can't get him to come out of the Jefferies tubes. But yet, somehow, Harriman managed to do it.
I'm at a loss here. How did he, of all people, do that?
I think it was probably the proximity to London. And Argyle, he has the sixth sense. He can, like, he can sense the fumes from a gin distillery. And I think that kind of pulled him out, you know, just long enough for people to catch that ever elusive glimpse of him.
Okay. Well, okay. All right. I can see this. It makes some sense.
But apparently the most alarming part of it was that he came on stage and he attempted to do a barrel roll.
Oh, my.
But somehow when Argyle does a barrel roll, it just doesn't have the same cool impact that it does when Geordi does it.
Oh, no, I imagine not. I imagine it's actually quite roly-poly.
Right. I think so. all right. No, that's our last hurrah for Stratford-upon-Avon, I think, as we're going to have to retire that.
Yay!
Little
it was
bit
a success.
Now. So, seriously, Star Trek London concluded, and one of the big events there, not involving the actors, was the attempt by fans to set a new world record for the most costumed Star Trek fans in one location. Now, Char, you remember that the record was set 2 years ago in Las Vegas.
Right. And now they have all 1,084 fans in London broken that record.
Right. Is that amazing, right? 1,084.
Yeah. Can you imagine all of these people in one room, all of these Trekkers, Trekkies, whatever you want to call them? I mean, I'm looking at the photo right now, and yeah, it's just swamped with people in uniforms, and there's just, yeah, holy wow.
Exactly, and right in the middle of that group, if you look closely, just slightly off-center to the left, mm-hmm. I think I see the monkey.
There he is. There's that wicked little monkey.
He's everywhere.
How did he get in there? I thought you had him in a cage, Chris.
Well, the UK has fairly strict quarantine regulations when you transport animals into the country. So I don't know how this monkey got in there, but somehow he managed to slip in. He probably came in dressed. He was probably doing his human cosplay, and he got in that way. That's what I think.
What do you suppose he dressed up as?
Yoko Ono.
Okay. That was too good. Nicely done, sir.
That's my only guess, because they'll certainly let her in with no problem, so.
Well, I was actually thinking maybe, I prefer actually, I'm assuming that the monkey is male, the male to female human cosplay, some cross-dressing, if you will.
Right.
Yeah. My initial thought was Robin Williams, but I like your suggestion a lot better.
I think if Greg were here, he would say the monkey dressed up as Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Oh, based on the last couple of shows that we've done. But yeah, so the previous record was 1,040 that was set at Star Trek Las Vegas 2011 Con. So when I said 2 years ago, I meant two cons ago.
Right.
And this is 1084, and this means that come next summer, everyone will have to attempt to top this at Star Trek Las Vegas.
So, well, of course.
I think we'll go for 1100. Of course, we'll have our staff meeting costume, group costume there.
Yes, I was just about to mention that. We will be doing our part.
So it's, yeah, we're going to get set. So everyone, start getting your costumes ready now and help us beat this record at Star Trek Las Vegas 2013.
That's right.
And while we're on the topic of Destination Star Trek London, Shara, we want to give a big shout out to Tom and Colin for their efforts. You know, Colin had his press pass. He was in so many different locations throughout the entire event. And Tom took over the Trek FM Twitter account for the weekend and did a lot of tweeting for us through there to keep everyone up to date. And Shar, Colin has put out a new Trek News and Views, and it's a recap of the con. Now, you told me in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
...that you have actually listened to most of this. So tell everyone what they can expect from Colin's recap.
You can expect quite a bit, actually. I listened to about two-thirds of the way through while I was running around town doing errands earlier today, and so I'll finish it up tomorrow. And I love Colin's narrative of this event. He gives a very honest account, both the good and the bad, what went right, what went wrong. He's got sound clips from things that he recorded during the convention. So I had to leave off with Avery Brooks and his panel. And I was really reluctant to hit that button because he was talking about, Avery Brooks was talking about being with William Shatner to record The Captains. And if you've seen that, you understand why this would be such an enticing thing to hear about from his perspective. And I still had to press the pause button. Ugh, and it was so painful. But I will look forward to hearing that first thing in the morning. I can't wait. And definitely check it out because Colin and Tom did an amazing job covering for us, representing Trek FM in London, and getting tons of stuff. Photos, audio, sound bites for friends, because Colin is just amazing like that. And also a little bit of commemoration on this being Colin's 50th show. Colin plays the audio file that Tom compiled from many other people, myself included, who love Colin and wishing him a happy 1-year/50-show anniversary. So that was a cool achievement that he recently went through as well. He had a busy, busy weekend last weekend.
He did. I don't know how he made it through everything. Not only the weekend, but the whole week leading up to it as well.
Oh,
it was pretty intense for Colin. So big thanks to Colin and to Tom for that. And everyone, just go over to trek.fm/TNV51. Or look up Trek News and Views on Stitcher or in iTunes and listen to the show. It's the longest Trek News and Views ever because it
has
a full recap. Though it's still shorter than a Ready Room, which is kind of scary. But someone needs to shut us up sometimes, I think. But go
not if check we break out the vodka.
Okay, so Shar, what do we have up next in news this week?
Looks like the next thing we have is TNG Season 2 having a theatrical event, much in the same way they did for the Season 1 Blu-ray release. They're going to do the same thing for Season 2. They're going to show Q-Who and The Measure of a Man, which should be fantastic. And
are they really showing those? Really?
Yes.
Man, I have got to get a better news source because I heard that they were showing Shades of Grey with 47 extra minutes of never-before-seen footage.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to that Fox.fm Trek news feed, aren't you?
I guess.
You can't help yourself.
Something.
I know that their fluffy news is great, but it's not real news, Chris. You gotta let go, buddy.
Oh, gotta let go. So yeah, no, you're right. They are showing Q-Who and The Measure of a Man.
Yes.
I would be very interested to see Q Who remastered on the big screen, getting that first glimpse of the Borg.
Yes.
And some of the visuals, you know, you have visuals in there like the shield adaptation of the Borg as the phasers are hitting. Mm-hmm. Those are some things that these days we remember that from Voyager or from First Contact, and we remember the, you know, very excellent effects that they were able to do. But sometimes we forget how basic those effects were in season two of The Next Generation when we very first met the Borg.
Right. It was some time ago, lest we forget, and they did not have CGI to make these things happen much more easily than we can today.
And not just the CGI element, but the things that they did, which were amazing, the way they were able to create effects. So much of the work that they put into that and the details were just lost in standard definition. And
right.
So just seeing that in HD, seeing it remastered, I think is going to be amazing. And seeing it on a big screen would be doubly so. Of course, I'm out of luck here in Tokyo because there's not going to be any theatrical event here.
Right. And I'm out of luck as well because there will not be such a showing in Fargo. So to the rest of you, have fun.
You just need to hop in your shuttlecraft and fly over to Minneapolis, and I'm sure it's showing there.
Yeah, this is true. I could, but it is on a Thursday, and I teach Thursday nights, so...
Make it a field trip. Get your students. Take them all over.
My runabout only holds about 4, maybe 5 people. 6 if we want to throw someone in the trunk.
Tell them that... I mean, you teach public speaking, right? Tell them that yes. We're going to go, we're going to watch Patrick Stewart and Whoopi Goldberg. They're going to teach you how to speak.
That would be pretty freaking sweet.
I'm pretty sure that North Dakota State University will approve the expense, because what better education could you possibly give to your students?
The finest. And of course they'll find room in the budget. Of course they will.
Of course they will.
Yeah.
We all know that schools have unlimited education funds because they are funded so well.
Right, yeah, especially in the economy right now. They've got nothing but just a huge pooled surplus of money right now. And so any chance to enrich the students' education, you know they're going to jump for it. Well, take one of the transit buses, drive it out to Minneapolis. Sure, yeah, not a problem.
All right. Well, for everyone else, I did check the list, and the list of theaters around the United States is quite extensive, very, very extensive, as long as you don't live in North Dakota. And yeah. We'll put some links in the show notes to the pages that have that listing. TrekNews.net has a very extensive listing that Brian has done there, so we will link you to that. And also... if you go to fathomevents.com, that's where you can actually purchase your tickets beginning November 2nd. And they have a nice little box there. You just type in your zip code and it will bring up a list of all the theaters within your area. And
right, unless you're in Fargo.
Unless you're Fargo, you get your tickets.
Yeah.
What I did not see here was a price for the tickets. So I would assume that they are the same price as last time.
Maybe they vary from theater to theater.
That's quite possible, yeah. I mean, if you're in New York City, the tickets probably cost more than they do if you're in Alabama. I'm just guessing.
I'd imagine so.
Although, in any case, they cost less than they do here, which going to a movie here is, in U.S. dollars, probably $30 to $35 a ticket.
Oh,
so
brutal.
We don't go to the theater that often, but...
I can see why not.
In addition to the two episodes, they're also going to be showing an extensive look at the restoration process, some never-before-seen interviews with the cast and the creatives. They're going to have this reunion of the original cast, although I'm pretty sure if it's the one that I've already seen clips of that's going to be on the Season 2 Blu-rays, it's minus Pulaski, even though this is Season 2. This was actually shot in December of 2011, and they have Gates there, but they don't have Diane Muldaur.
Well, that's just kind of wrong, don't you think? I mean, Pulaski was there for season two.
Maybe, although I think, you know, Gates wearing the curly Pulaski wig, she pulls it off fairly well in the whole reunion. So something you definitely don't want to miss.
This is something I want to see now, because we have seen her as a blonde, of course, just not with curly short hair.
That's right.
I might have to travel just to go see that, Chris.
You should. I mean, especially you. I mean, the person who wrote an entire article about hairstyles for Trek FM. You really should be there.
Yes, I'm thinking of expanding that to hairstyles on all of the Trek series. Starting with Janice Rand and Uhura. And I already covered Janeway, so then I'll have to go to Paul and Hoshi.
I'm waiting for your article about the many hairstyles of Travis Mayweather.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will be looking at that extensively. just because it changes so drastically, just like the character does on the whole series.
Right. Yeah. No one had more follicle development than Travis Mayweather.
Right. Changes almost every day.
Exactly. The only problem is that in order to see it, you have to get those offset shots because they forgot to actually film him on camera for some reason.
Yeah, but, you know, it's going to be a labor of love, Chris. Let's put it that way. It's going to be a lot of really, just long-distance analyzing, trying to just see in as clear a focus as I possibly can what was going on there and where how long exactly his hair was at that particular time, if he had combed it that day or not.
It's going to be a truly riveting piece that we're going to be publishing.
Oh, you know it.
Absolutely. All right. So we will put a link to the tickets and in the show notes, as well as the theatrical listings. And now this is, of course, leading up to the release of TNG Season 2 on Blu-ray, which will happen in the U.S. on December 4th. And for some reason will happen for us in Japan on December 21st. I don't understand these delays because it's not like they have to do all the voiceover work again because it's all been done already in the past for Japanese. But have the delay. But the bigger problem for me, Shar, is I checked again and the price is still holding on Amazon in the U.S. at $114.86 for the shortened Season 2 Blu-ray set because there were, of course, fewer episodes in that season.
Yeah, that seems like a ridiculously high cost, especially for a season that was... I'm sorry, that Season 2 is not worth that much in my opinion. It's better than Season 1, but it's not Season 5 either.
Yeah, I'm hoping that in the coming weeks, as we get closer to this release, that we will see that price come down.
I hope so, because they're not going to sell many at that price. They're just not. Who can afford it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I checked here. When it does come out December 21st in Japan, it is going to sell for 18,735 yen from Amazon, which is $235 US.
Oh,
so
wow.
I certainly will not be picking it up in a Japanese edition.
No, that's a huge investment for one set of discs.
Right. And really? And the Season 1 price has increased in the U.S. to $76.59 after being $59 when it first came out. So that price is actually going in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I'm a little frustrated by the pricing still. I'm hoping it's going to come down. We'll see. I definitely want to get my hands on the discs. Still hoping at some point that CBS kind of comes to its senses on how much money fans have in their pockets to dish out for these things.
Right. So. And with a December 4th release in the U.S., I'm sure they're counting on lots of sales for Christmas time and whatnot. But... I'm sorry, that's a little bit much that I'd spend on a gift for most people.
Yeah, it's a big gift purchase, especially this year. All right, well, let's move on to the next story, Char. I found this interesting piece from a gallery in the UK called Generation Gallery, and they are remembering the life and the contributions of Gene Roddenberry during this 21st anniversary of his passing through typography. And we've seen a number of these things recently, largely on YouTube. Now, I know Tom from Decade did one of the STO opening. It was the free-to-play trailer, I believe, the narration that Leonard Nimoy did. He did it as kinetic typography, as video, and I've seen a few others. Now, this is actually an art print that is using typography.
Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. I hadn't seen anything about this until just now. It's very interesting. If you're into typography, if you're a font nerd like I am, you are looking at this and dissecting which fonts they used and where for these random quotes throughout the poster. And you'd probably get a kick out of it if you're into that sort of a thing.
Right. And it's just very cool looking. They're taking quotes from Star Trek and setting them. We'll put a visual. Actually, if you're listening to the Enhanced podcast here, this will be your cover artwork at this moment, and you can take a peek. But they have phrases like, of course, live long and prosper. You're suffering from a Vulcan mind meld, doctor. And I like, of course, the classic, that green-blooded son of a bitch.
And right in the middle, no less.
Right in the middle, I know. It's like the first thing that you see when you look at the
poster. Yes, it is. I'm sure that was placed intentionally.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. And I like the one here. Shut up, Spock. We're rescuing you.
Yeah. Well, there's all sorts of good ones here. It's always been easier to destroy than to create. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Which is a phrase I used 2 days ago. So.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe we can save that for the other side of the room.
Oh, we can do that, yes. So yeah, this is very cool. It's a limited edition art piece. It's limited to 995 pieces. It measures 16.5 by 11.7 inches, and it's hand numbered.
Ooh.
And in terms of cost, it's going to run you £15 in the UK or $20. And if you buy this piece right now, they're actually giving you two additional prints for free. So it's a buy one, get two free sale. Is that what that would be, Char?
Essentially, yeah.
I think so. And one of the other prints is the refit NCC 1701 from the original series movies, and also the 1701D.
Yeah, and they look fantastic. So that's a really good deal.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I wouldn't mind having this typography poster for sure. And we'll put a link to order these in the show notes, but you can go over to generationgallery.com if you'd like to look at all their other artwork, as well as find this one.
Excellent.
All right, so Char, let me ask you, on your phone, what is your ringtone?
Well, I have a few ringtones. It depends on who's calling me. Probably most relevant for what Trekkers want to know is when I get a new text message, it has the Voyager door chime for my alert sound. Otherwise, my default ringtone is actually from The Matrix, so...
Oh, wow. How lame is that?
I know.
You're on a,
sorry.
You're on a Star Trek podcast?
I know. Kick me off right now. Here's my pips.
Are you resigning from Starfleet, Char? Putting your pips down on the table. That's when we know you mean business, just like Picard.
That's right. I'm pulling them off, and I'm going to slam them onto the counter. That's right. I'm going to be angry about it.
Now, I believe for your iMessage, now when Greg Unit actually texts you, it goes, "Mutiny bastards!" Right?
No, that's when Drew messages me.
I thought Drew was, "Are you of the body?"
No, with Greg, I have the Star Trek IV whale probe.
That's perfect. From his favorite Star Trek movie.
Exactly. That's how I like to remember Greg Unit.
That's excellent.
And yeah, he's going to be sitting here listening to this just groaning. Really, Char? Really? You mutiny bastard. You off the show forever.
That's right.
But I love you, Greg Unit. You know I do.
Well, for me, I have the next generation door chime for iMessages from my number one. And for my ringtone, I have the piano version of Ilea's theme from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful.
I don't like loud ringtones, so this kind of just dun 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 coming in is perfect for me.
You wouldn't like my ringtone then.
But the reason I ask you, Char, is because at last, and I've actually been wondering when these were going to come to iTunes, but Trek Tones are now available in the iTunes store for iOS devices. And I've had a few, you know, I wanted to try when they first put the ringtones in the store, I wanted to try a few and there were no Star Trek ones. So I got a few of R2-D2 from, you know, that other franchise. And
ew.
Those were nice, but I'm thinking, when are the Star Trek ones going to come? Now, I just made my own because I can grab sound clips, you know, and just make my own ringtones as anyone can. If you want to go to the trouble, that's fine.
Well, right. That's what I do.
All right, right. But I thought it would be cool if they would actually put them in there so people who don't have the tools to do that or just don't want to bother with it could simply purchase the door chime or the boatswain whistle or whatever sound they want to have from the series and just download it and just set it, you know, as the sound for the ringtone or for the message from whomever. And finally, they can.
This does seem really overdue. Like, this is a very common thing nowadays to have ringtones for anything and everything ready to download. And so all I gotta really say is it's about time because I was one of those people that just did it myself. But not everybody either knows how or wants to go to the effort to do that. And yet they still want this stuff. So here you go. Finally.
Right. It's finally here. They have over 100 different tones available. Many of them are sounds, which are, of course, very easy for you to get, as we've said, from like TrekCore or other sites. But a lot of them are also phrases, which can be a little bit more difficult for you to get clean clips of these phrases. And so they've actually, you know, made the effort to trim different phrases out of the episodes and kind of clean them up so that they work better as a device tone. Of course, they have Spock's Live Long and Prosper. Picard's Tea, Earl Grey Hot.
Very nice. And my personal favorite, Staff Meeting.
That's the perfect one. And for some reason, that one costs twice as much as the others. I think that Dork Trek has driven up the value of that phrase.
Yeah, they've got to get their cut.
But you know, my favorite one, and I'm really glad this is in here. I was afraid they were going to leave it out, is Harry Kim saying, "It's not you, it's me."
Yeah, I'm going to download that one because, I know it applies to some people that I know.
I'm so glad there's some Voyager love, you know, in what's going on here as well.
Yes, of course.
But no, seriously, there are 100 tones available. They come from the original series and the Next Generation. And kind of sadly for me a little bit, I was looking at the pricing and I was expecting to find some kind of pack that I could buy, you know, like $5.99 for the TOS pack, $5.99 for the TNG pack. But I don't see anything like that. They're a la carte and they are 99 cents each in the US iTunes store. So you're not going to spend $100 to buy all these tones.
No.
So my first reaction was, this is insane. I can't believe that they're charging you 99 cents for Live Long and Prosper, 99 cents for I'm Not a Magician, Spock, and 99 cents for Tea Earl Grey Hot. But at the same time, you know, that's how it is with all the other tones that they have. you know, from Star Wars, from whatever other show. They're all 99 cents per tone. So I guess it makes sense to me. Just, you know, pick the one or two that you want and grab them, and you can have a very cool Star Trek experience on your phone.
Yeah, I suppose that's what most people will do, is pick a couple favorites and then call it at that. Yeah. And then the rest of us who are uber nerdy and want every little bits, every one of those sound bites, well, we already have them downloaded on there anyway.
Right.
Chances are.
So I'm glad to see this coming anyway. It opens it up to all fans, even those who aren't very techie, to be able to actually make their communicator a real communicator by giving it the proper sound that it deserves. And we'll have links to these in the show notes. Also the enhanced, if you want to tap your artwork right now, if you're listening to this, it'll actually open the App Store on your device directly to these tones. I did find that if I try to use the links on the desktop, normally you can do that and it will actually open it up in iTunes. Mm-hmm. I was just getting a dead page. It had the title, nothing else on the page. But if I do it from my device, it actually does open up and I can sample all of the tones. So I don't know if that was a bug yesterday and it's going to be fixed or what, but check these out. Very nice addition for your device. So, Char, we have one last item up in news this week, and this is one I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on. StarTrek.com was running a poll. We just talked about one of their other polls last show, I believe, or the show before that. This one is, which Trek series should be a movie? And, Char, who won the poll?
Well, guess what? As the Voyager series editor at Trek FM, I am proud to say that Voyager won with 43% of the vote.
They did. And that doesn't surprise me, because Voyager is the series for which we hear the most chatter, you know, on Twitter, and the most noise of fans wanting to have a movie. Now, second place was Deep Space Nine with 39%. And then after that, trailing far behind was Enterprise with 18%. And of course, The Next Generation and the original series got no votes since they already were movies.
Right. Yeah. Been there, done that. Let's give somebody else a chance.
Now, the animated series didn't get any votes. I don't know why that is.
Oh, well, gee. Can't imagine why.
Come on, people. Don't you want to see Maress on the big screen?
Of course we do.
So what do you think about Voyager here, Char?
Okay, well, to be totally honest, I voted in this poll, and guess what I voted for?
You voted for Enterprise, right?
How did you know?
Well, it's part of your research for the Travis Mayweather hair article.
Well, yeah, but we were just making this public now, and, well... No, absolutely not. No, I voted for Voyager. I can't even. I just don't think Enterprise would work well as a feature film. I know some people are going to disagree with me on that, but that's okay. You know what I would really love to see? It, just in my opinion, is do some sort of a crossover with the Voyager cast in the Alpha Quadrant combined with Deep Space Nine.
Okay, this is another thing I want to talk about. Okay, so...
Okay.
Why don't we read a few comments that some of StarTrek.com's readers left on the page? I picked out just a few of them.
Okay.
So for Voyager, Arlene Calandria said, I want a Voyager movie. Kate will kick ass. Okay.
That she would.
Do you agree, Kate? Cake?
Yeah.
Well, Cake always kicks ass, but what about Kate?
Yeah.
Does Kate kick ass also?
You know what would kick the most ass? Kate eating cake.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
A whole episode about that. Get a whole movie about that. The search for cake.
Yeah, just like give her one bowl, you know, one plate. Okay, this is carrot cake. She's done with that. Give her some red velvet. Done with that. Cheesecake. Some of that. Lemon cake.
We do know that she's fond of pecan pie because she made that for that creepy French alien guy. Prime Factors.
Maybe she needs to stay away from pie and eat cake instead.
Right. I mean, it goes well with coffee, and we all know what a coffee junkie she is.
Yeah, she could have coffee flavored cake. She could have tiramisu.
Now that I tell you this, we often talk about how the Voyager writers kind of they missed a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
Coffee flavored cake. A captain whose vice was coffee flavored cake. She goes up to the replicator and she says cake, coffee, flavor. She has to say flavor because otherwise, you know, the computer gets confused and actually gives her coffee, but
right. Yeah. Yeah. Surely Captain Janeway did this at some point and we just didn't see it. Because probably. I'm convinced that all she eats is coffee flavored foods.
I think
if she's
so,
not
right.
just drinking coffee. I mean, she had coffee ice cream and she probably has like coffee flavored oatmeal in the morning or something like that.
Well, you know, every time she looks at Chakotay and she calls him Coco, what she's picturing in her head is that he's like a giant cafe mocha. That's what she means by Coco.
I see. Well, no wonder she gives him that lustful gaze every now and again.
And that's why she drinks him up in her quarters every night, but we don't get to see it on camera.
We got to save that for fanfic, don't we? As soon as Greg Unit gets back and reverses his sex change, we got to get back to writing our fanfic.
Yeah, you really do. It's kind of getting backlogged a little bit.
We've got all these ideas and we just need to write them down before we lose them.
You have all these ideas. Yeah. You just need to map it all out.
Lots and lots of mapping.
So let's go on. Debbie Cromack left a comment and she said, Voyager hands down, we were left hanging and rushed at the series end. And then Duncan Shaw says, Voyager is in the lead because the whole concept of Voyager could have been reduced to a film. The best thing about Voyager, as has been highlighted recently in one of your polls, was the opening sequence.
Right. And didn't Voyager win that poll as well?
They did. But he's saying that that's the best part of Voyager, that the rest of the show was crap. That's pretty much what Duncan is saying here.
I don't totally agree with him on that. But I do think that, you know, if we wouldn't have had Voyager the series, yes, it would have made a good movie. They could have done something very interesting with it. However, if they did a movie now, I would definitely want to see something not necessarily all in the Delta Quadrant back in the time that we knew. I would actually like to see 15 years later after Voyager's come home, because what we did see in the Voyager finale was all an alternate reality. We don't really know what happened to our crew.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You know, for me personally, I don't know. I do not agree with Duncan that the entire concept of Voyager could have been distilled into a single film. And I'm not sure that they could have done a film, just a film, you know, of the idea of a vessel being lost in the Delta Quadrant and getting back, and really done it justice. It feels like it would have required, you know, like a trilogy or something to flesh it all out. But I don't know. For me personally, I don't really have, and I've never really had much interest in Voyager as a film. It is a good point that you make about Endgame being an alternate reality, but, you know, a lot of Star Trek is an alternate reality. I mean, in a way, All Good Things is a confusing bit of alternate realities that in The Next Generation.
That's true.
You
make a good point.
I don't know. I think it would be interesting to find out on the screen, you know, what happened to the crew after they got back. I do kind of agree that Endgame felt it lacked the kind of closure that I think we wanted.
Yes.
I do think the moment when they come out of the vortex and there's this silence as they approach Earth spoke volumes about the emotions of the crew. I thought that was a nice touch. But it's also sudden. You know, all this stuff to get back. And I've always felt that Endgame was basically an All Good Things redux, and that they didn't have an idea of how really to end Voyager. So they tried to recreate the magic of All Good Things, because there's so many similarities between those episodes. And it came off for me, you know, kind of lacking that impact that I wanted from the finale.
Yeah.
So, in terms of, well, okay, I want to talk about the crossover idea that you mentioned. Before okay. we do that, 39% Deep Space Nine. Now,
okay. Yeah, we got some comments here for arguing in favor of a Deep Space Nine movie. And Andrew Werner says, as much as I love DS9, I don't think a movie based on it could be sufficiently self-contained. It'd end up like Serenity. He's arguing against a Deep Space Nine movie. And, you know, I kind of see his point, which is part of why I'd want to see a crossover, but we'll get into that.
Okay.
Jennifer Colbert says, man, Deep Space Nine. Voyager had an ending. Any movie would be, and here is the cast again. It would be hard to come up with a unique story that isn't Voyager in 120 minutes. Deep Space Nine, on the other hand, had so many loose ends and potential ideas. Hmm. So that's interesting.
Well, Deep Space Nine did have many, many loose ends. There were so many things that were left unresolved at the end of the series. And I think that was in part because the cast was so enormous for DS9. You know, they were able to take about 20 or so characters and actually flesh them out into people that you cared about. And it was so hard to resolve all of that. I mean, they did a 9-episode arc to end the series, and even that was not enough.
Right.
But I also think part of it was by design. I mean, the dissonance and the strife of DS9 was that in life things don't always get resolved, and the fact that the series ended and left you feeling like, it's not like Lost where you felt like you didn't get a resolution. Why did these people spend all this time on this island, and then you find out in the end and you're like, really? That's what you're going with here? It wasn't like that. It felt like it was meaningfully unresolved at the end of DS9. But I do agree that it would be hard to take one movie of DS9 and build upon it. I mean, it was a serialized show, and by nature, the movies themselves, it would have to be kind of like Star Trek 2, 3, 4, this kind of serialized trilogy or ongoing story for it to feel like DS9. You know, I wouldn't really want to see self-contained DS9 stories. So
right.
As much as I always thought DS9 was the series that would make the best movies, until we got to What You Leave Behind and the way it ended, and then I felt, you know, maybe this is how it has to end.
I'm kind of with you there. I wasn't dissatisfied with the way DS9 ended. Voyager, on the other hand, is a different story, which is why I was cheering on for a Voyager movie, but that's just me. Now, David Handy, on the other hand, someone who commented on this poll, he agrees with me and says Voyager and Deep Space Nine together. So I think there's a lot of us out there who want that.
So tell me, because I am opposed to that idea personally, tell me why you want to see a movie that mixes Voyager and DS9 crews together.
I think if it were done properly, it would be a fun reunification for fans. Sort of like how Worf got on board for the TNG movies. Like
always by accident.
In First Contact, anyway, it worked beautifully.
I just happen to be wandering through this sector of space, Captain. Can I come aboard and help you with your 90-minute mission?
Right. I'm not saying it always worked. For First Contact, on the other hand, it really did. And so if they did something we saw maybe some of the cast members, because I don't think they could get everybody on board from both casts to have some kind of important part in a 120-minute movie. Yeah. No, that's not what I'm suggesting. I think they'd have to have a handful from each crew and maybe even some new people, I don't know, interacting for some other bigger arc story that they're simply a part of. And I think that would work in real life anyway, just because I know some of the Trek actors are not interested in doing a movie, whereas others have expressed an interest. Get the people that want to go on there and build a story around these characters and let's find out their futures.
Okay, I can see that.
Give them one last hurrah.
I can see that a lot of fans would enjoy that. Maybe it feels like something that might be more of a TV movie than a motion picture. I'm not sure. I think for me, the thing is that, like, when in Nemesis, when Janeway shows up on the view screen, I actually rolled my eyes. I'm like,
You did?
Yeah.
Okay, like, why?
It's just this thing that it feels forced to me. It's like, of all the admirals in Starfleet, Janeway is going to be the one to contact Picard. Now, if the problem had been with the Borg, I could get it. Okay, Janeway, she's an expert on the Borg from her experience in the Delta Quadrant. I get that.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was the Romulans, and it was Shinzon, and why? It was simply, let's throw Janeway on there for the fans. And I don't know. I think that I want the world to feel more real to me. And in the real world, I don't think Janeway would be the person who is contacting Picard. And I mean, I'm sure many listeners completely don't agree with me on that. my problem comes largely, sometimes it works. Like O'Brien going to Deep Space Nine, I think worked fabulously. And the whole idea worked for me perfectly because O'Brien was one of the little people on the Enterprise. So for him, it was a career advancement for him that he became the chief of operations on this space station.
Right.
And that made sense for me. You know, in the books on the Titan, Tuvok is now on the Titan with Riker. And
oh, really?
I feel like that's just another case of, okay, let's grab familiar characters and let's stick them on. Now, Tuvok being on the Excelsior with Sulu, which we saw in flashback, I was okay with that because he was a younger officer back then. And sure, maybe he was assigned to the Excelsior. It's no problem.
And Vulcans live a long time.
Right, right. And maybe it's a double standard for me that I'm okay with Tuvok being on the Excelsior, but not on the Titan. You know, maybe that's me being unreasonable. I don't know. Maybe it would work fine. But you get other things, like in the books, you know, Ezri Dax is the captain of the USS Aventine.
Right.
Well, it does that again. I mean, I know that there's a progression of events and how she ends up as the captain, but it just doesn't make sense to me. And I feel like it's easy in Star Trek to draw upon this small group of characters for everything. And so you have this vast universe and you have this big galaxy and you have this gigantic Starfleet, and yet somehow everyone knows everyone, everyone crosses paths, they all end up on the same ships together. And for me, it's just something that I don't really want to see, that kind of full-on crossover of series.
Okay. You make a good case, and I do agree with you that in real life, the universe is not that incestuously small. But I think for the sake of fans, if they did something like this, of course, this is how it would have to play out. And if it weren't a movie, I could see it being a miniseries. That might work. TV movie. Do people make TV movies anymore?
They do sometimes. I think, it could be a miniseries. And they could replace Seven with Six. So say we all. And then they could do a number of miniseries and then maybe lead into a full-on, you know, television series out of it. But you make a good point. I mean, I completely see your point that for fans, for many fans, that's how it would have to play out. You know, you draw upon the familiar faces. And I think it also depends on if you're looking at Star Trek for Star Trek or if you're looking at Star Trek for drama and storytelling, whereas the Star Trek elements are not the most important part of what's going on, which leads us to number three in the poll, 18% voting for Enterprise, because many people felt that Enterprise wasn't Star Trek. And now you said that you don't really see how Enterprise could be a movie.
Well, granted, I've not seen all of Enterprise, but I have a hard time envisioning that crew on the big screen. And that's kind of where the thought ends for me. Just, No, I don't feel like they have the chops for it. It just, it doesn't resonate at all with me. That doesn't seem like a good idea. And I'm not even sure why, but it's just an automatic no in my head.
I think I can see, in terms of looking at the cast, you know, not feeling like they would have the chops for a movie. Although I could say the same thing about the Voyager cast. I almost feel that apart from maybe Kate Mulgrew, maybe Roxanne Dawson, I don't quite feel like the Voyager crew has those movie chops in the same way that the Next Generation or the original series crew did either.
Well, I mean, who would have thought, though, that having Troy on the big screen would be as hilarious as she was when she was getting drunk with Saffron Cochran?
Well,
you just
true.
Never totally know.
That is true. I'll tell you with Enterprise, there is one reason why Enterprise could possibly be the best choice for movies. So cast aside, Enterprise failed. I think Enterprise is a great show. I love Enterprise. Enterprise completely failed in two respects. One is that it is a series that should have shown us the events that led up to the creation, the formation of the Federation. Mm-hmm. And it failed to do that. It tried to cram it all into the last episode of The Next Generation. These are the Voyages. And the other place where it failed is that it should have, instead of this whole Zindi thing that was going on, it should have shown us the Romulan Wars, because those were the events from history that we know happened, but we really don't know much about. And there was kind of that promise there. You know, in the early season, you have things like Minefield, where you actually, they start introducing the Romulans, and you think that this is where they're headed. But then they don't go there. And so a series of Enterprise movies that explores the events of the Romulan Wars, I think, would make a great big screen outing for Star Trek, and it would fill in the gaps that a lot of fans are missing, and they want to know what happened prior to the original series.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of fans out there who would say, hey, yeah, that is an amazingly good idea. I will go see that.
Yeah, I think maybe. But we'll never know, because we're not going to get any of these movies. But it's a fun little exercise. It's a fun little debate. I mean, we're going to get we're going to get Star Trek Into Darkness. We're going to get, after that, Star Trek Into London, which we've already described. And as I understand, the fourth one, Star Trek Into Sand. So
yes. Can't wait for that one.
We knew from the beginning that the Trill as a joined species were a little bit different, and we didn't know that much about how past hosts worked. But in the third season episode, Equilibrium, we got to see some past personalities resurfacing in Jadzia. And today we're going to explore the Trill, and we're going to explore Equilibrium and murky pools of water underground. And to help us do that, we have two first-time guests on the Ready Room, but people who many of our listeners already know from their show, Commentary Track Stars. And it is Mike and Max. Hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. Good to be here. Good times.
We're glad to have you guys on the Ready Room, finally, after quite a while. And also, we're very happy to make an announcement and let you guys tell everyone that coming up very shortly, you are going to be bringing a new podcast to Trek FM.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. Thank you very much for letting us play in your sandbox. or what have you.
In the litter box, as it might be.
Bury
some
toys in the sandbox.
Absolutely. We're really excited about it. Why don't you just take a minute and tell all of our listeners about this new show and how you're going to be approaching the world of Star Trek.
In less than a minute.
Well, essentially, we're calling it Commentary Trek Stars.
Trek Stars, yes. That's T-R-E-K. I'm sorry about that. That's my terrible idea. We talk about people who are involved in Star Trek's other works.
Right. The creators of Star Trek.
Yeah.
But not talking about what they did in Star Trek, talking about what they did outside of Star Trek.
Yes.
And it's going to be short. It's only going to be about half an hour long. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do like a series.
For over a minute.
All right. That's it.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, then.
I'll listen to it. I'm in it.
I will too, though.
It's going to be very interesting, I think, especially for me as a designer and as a creative. I'm always interested in the creative side and what people are doing beyond Star Trek, because obviously, except for maybe a few cases, Star Trek is not the entire lives of these people. And yeah. I think it helps to flesh out the universe a lot and flesh out how they think. And then when you watch Star Trek, you see different things in the stories that they wrote or in the episodes that they shot, because you learn a bit more about how they view the world.
Yeah, it's also just a really good way of finding new cool stuff that you might like.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's like some, a movie or an episode which you're particularly fond of, maybe we can point you to some other work by the guy who did that,
Yeah.
So. Yeah, very cool.
We probably wouldn't have watched Battlestar Galactica had Ron Moore not left that trail of breadcrumbs.
Would not have watched Battlestar Galactica for that, so, yeah.
Great. Well, this show will be coming out in the coming weeks, so just, keep an eye on our Twitter feed and of course, on our other shows, and we'll let everyone know when it's up. So very glad to have you guys. And so today, let's talk about Equilibrium. We're back around to DS9, and we decided we wanted to take a look at Dax. So, Char, you helped me actually choose the episode, so why don't you lead us into Equilibrium?
All right. Well, yeah, when we were kind of trying to figure out what episode we were going to discuss, this one came up because I've got fond memories of this one. I kind of came into DS9 a little bit late. I sporadically watched seasons 1 and 2, didn't really get into it until season 3. And so this was about the point where I started watching it regularly and getting to know the characters. And this is the episode where I really kind of just fell in love with Dax. And so, yeah, I think it was more of a nostalgic value than anything that made me think of this episode. But we get to learn a lot about the Trill, what exactly goes on between the host and the symbiont. And we get to see the Trill homeworld a little bit. But I also just like the interaction of these characters. I mean, it starts out really cool. We have this real life glimpse into what happens in the off hours. And there's this gathering where they're coming over to Sisko's quarters and he's cooking dinner. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just like that real life aspect to it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think Deep Space Nine tended to do really well. Next Generation did a pretty good job of it too. But I don't know, there seemed to be a bit more camaraderie among the characters on Deep Space Nine. You can see them all getting together for some dinner,
It's kind of weird though, because Roddenberry actually talked about how he modeled the Next Generation as a kind of Gunsmoke. And he wanted likable characters, people you wanted to visit with, and from time to time you enjoyed being around them. But Picard starts the show hating children. Worf yells at everyone all the time. And Geordi doesn't really say anything that doesn't have at least 4 syllables for a whole season.
Well, to be fair, Deep Space Nine pretty much does the same thing. It's Sisko doesn't want to be there.
Except really quickly. They're all hanging out and having jokes, and almost immediately, the whole Quark Odo thing, they're oh, we hate each other, but we kind of hug from time to time. Yeah. And one time we got drunk and hooked up. It happened. We don't talk about it. But they make it very clear. They're a very good family kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we got to mention in this opening scene here, Odo whisking the souffle. I agree with Kira. That is exceptionally cute.
Well, do you agree with me? Now, my idea was that I want to write a letter to Think Geek. I think Think Geek should make a life-size Odo mixer that you can put in the corner of your kitchen.
I would love to have that.
You put the bowl in one hand, you put the whisk, and you just press start, and then he just awkwardly stands there and mixes and mixes and mixes.
I think KitchenAid needs to get on this right now in conjunction with Think Geek. Because I have a KitchenAid mixer, you know, that's pretty awesome. If it has that quality and it's Odo, you know I'll buy one.
Oh, God. That sounds terrifying. That sounds so frightening. If your spouse bought that and like set it up in the kitchen and like you wake up and you go into the kitchen and there's freaking Odo like stirring some stuff, you would jump out the window to your death in like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
That is a terrifying image. I ought to see what he thinks of this because I'm sure he would get creeped out. But here's the real kicker is it's voice activated, right? It has the button, too, but you can really get it going if you just say, I think you just look so cute. And then he just... would be so cute. Good.
I'm the only one that thinks this sounds horrifying.
No, I mean, it would startle me every time I came in the room, but I still
like,
want
you
one.
Bring people over, and they're like, what's that? Oh, it's really cute. And then he goes... and they just... You know, they grab the nearest pointy thing and start stabbing it, because that's what people do.
You guys, okay, home security, think about this. This could double as a mixer / security guy. I mean, Odo is security, right?
That's right, he is.
If somebody thinks that someone's in your kitchen, and they're thinking about maybe breaking into your house, but they see somebody standing there, they're not going to go in.
That's true.
He's doubling his security. This is Odo's role. This is perfect.
He's got like a halfly formed face. You know, you just pull the bowl out there and have him, instead of holding a whisk, like just a knife. And you know, just perfectly.
If you're watching it through like the shaded blinds or something, I mean, you're just seeing a shadow. It doesn't matter.
There's a creepy monster stirring with a knife.
Yeah.
And he's going to get you.
Yeah, I think
you're not going
to
break into that house.
We need to write to Think Geek and let him know.
We do. Well, would it make it better if they had like a set of 5 different masks from Equilibrium that you could put on Odo's face?
That would not make it better.
Anytime you say, who are you? It removes it.
And there's another mask.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We're creeping Max out.
That's crossing a line. Yeah.
Max is not coming over for dinner.
We're concocting a scenario to create an extremely expensive thing that would last maybe 2 hours before somebody broke it.
Well, you know, I did write to Think Geek once. Actually, I tweeted to them. I told them that they need to get to work on a giant HD television that looks like the view screen from Ops on DS9. And they thought that was a great idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get that at some point.
Yeah, I think you gotta pitch this.
They are really open to our ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I've got an idea for a life-size Tim Curry. But it's really an elaborate plan to kill someone.
Okay.
It might be Tim Curry.
Back to the whole scene, though. In I guess it's Sisko's quarters. I hope Sisko didn't take over someone else's quarters in order to cook his beets, which apparently Bashir is scared of beets, I noticed. But
apparently.
One thing I notice here too is the lighting. I really like the lighting textures on DS9 that it seems like a real place. It's the first thing I thought when I saw them all gathered, they're cooking. You've got all these textures, both of the lights, of the interiors of the clothing, everything going on. It just feels like a real place to me as compared to the hospital feel of the Enterprise D.
Yeah, and something to note is also what this was the start of season 3, so photography had just been taken over by Jonathan West, is that his name? Who had been working on Next Generation. And when that happened, I think even though he was sort of like Marvin Rush's lackey or whatever, I think he's actually better than Marvin Rush. And the look of the show really sort of, you know, went up a few notches.
It went a couple notches.
Okay, but Deep Space Nine has always been a really good looking show, and I totally agree.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what we also find out here in this scene is we get the whole start of, I think what Shara called in her notes, Jadzia PMSing over keyboards and chess.
I am glad you said that and not me.
Yeah, leave it to me to make the snide comment against a woman. I was talking about the chess game in particular, and then I made a different reference to the keyboard, which was player off, Trill Cat.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
It's a little over the top. It's one of those things where you see it and you just kind of be like, oh, it's going to be.
You kind of be like that?
You're kind of. You're just kind of like, oh, it's going to be one of those episodes.
I mean, to me, it's a hilarious situation where she reacts ridiculously and nobody says anything. It's like, yeah, that's normal. Fine.
Right.
That happens all the time around here. It never happens.
Yeah, well, here's the thing is, like, when she's playing with that keyboard and they're talking to her about it, she's just shushing them. Be quiet!
Yeah.
And so they learn to back the heck off. But then, yeah, with the chess stuff, when she's playing in the next scene with Ben Sisko, whoa, okay, honey, take your pills.
Yeah.
Seriously, this is uncalled for. It's a game.
Well, you know, in the back of their minds, they're thinking, alien has taken over her body, right? Because
naturally,
because they've seen
whenever
the show.
Someone acts strangely on Star Trek, they have usually been possessed by an alien, whether it's Troy, whether it's Picard, whether it's Keiko O'Brien. It's always someone.
Well, if they're over. Acting strangely in a angry way, they're possessed. If they're acting strangely in a stupid or drunken way, they're infected.
Yes.
The two ways that people's behavior changes on Star Trek. I just wish that at some point they'd brought her in and Julian's like, oh, let me do a scan. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah. She's a woman.
Okay.
Mystery solved,
well, guys.
Let's
go that far.
Let's go hit back the Scooby van and I got some 40-ounce blood wine.
If Julian had just taken her and scanned her and found out that there's some kind of problem going on, we could have moved along. But instead, everyone backs away and, like, oh, yeah, she's kind of crazy. Let's let her have a couple of hours or nights or days or whatever to figure it out. And then she shows up strangely in Bashir's quarter. So the guy who's been chasing after you for two seasons, trying to sleep with you unsuccessfully, and then you're going to just show up in his quarters. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing, is Julian is actually a very good friend to Jadzia in this episode. He's not being a jerk. He's not being this self-righteous, overbearing, trying way too hard guy. He's being a genuine friend here. And I like this Julian. I wish he would have been that way from the beginning.
Well, he needed to have his little arc.
It is a little arc. He kind of doesn't really change all that much.
I mean, I think he comes to, you know, he starts just like by just lusting after her, and then I think as he gets to know her, he becomes her friend.
That's not really an arc.
Well, it's a little arc.
I mean that's more or less like hey baby, you look good, and she's like, I'm not interested, and he's like, oh that's cool, we'll be friends then. Yeah, that's not a problem for me. I gotta go to the... I'll see you in a bit. That's what happens. That's not an arc.
Okay, all right.
It's not an arc. And besides, I mean, like the second she turns into Ezri, he's like, I'm back in it. Let's do this.
That's right.
Let's do this. Second chance.
Yep, and he does.
Puts on a new uniform, you know, irons his stuff, combs his hair. He's like, yo, what you doing? She's like, nothing. He's like, I'm in. That's what happened.
Yeah. Wow. You just summed up Julian Bashir.
Oh, yeah.
From the beginning in Emissary, when Sisko asks Jadzia, he does know that you're a Trill, right? And she says, yes, he knows I'm a joined species. He thinks it's fascinating. So basically, he wasn't interested in Jadzia all that time. We thought it was her, but it was really Dax. That's why he jumped all over Ezri.
It kind of makes sense.
Because it was his second chance with Dax.
You think?
You know, in a sense, yeah.
She's the hottest person on the station.
Okay, well,
I think we're going a little overboard if we assume that he's being so deep that he's actually in love with the symbiote. I think that's a little. I mean, hopefully.
Oh, I didn't say he was being deep by being in love with the symbiote. I was just saying that maybe he's in love with the symbiote. That's all.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
could be.
Yeah, I mean that's the nice way of looking at it, but I don't think so.
But I think at this point, Bashir is being more of a friend to Jadzia, as you say, Shar. But this is the point where the character of Bashir is evolving into being more of a meaningful character. He's not the, you know, in the beginning, he was the Kirk, he was the Riker, he was what Tom Paris would have been, that mm-hmm. same character on Voyager when Voyager came around. You know, they have to have the ladies' man, he has to be chasing the girls. And fortunately, they did evolve Bashir into more of a meaning character.
It's interesting that almost in like all the new Star Trek series, they essentially have tried to split, like, you know, the captain into two people and have the, you mm-hmm. know, the captain, the leader, and then the ladies' man. And every single time it has not worked. Every single time the captain ends up being the one that's, you know, cool. Except, of course, for Janeway.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So let me ask you, Max. Now, you wanted to talk about what you call theatrical personalities on Star Trek as pertaining to some things in this episode. What exactly do you mean by theatrical personalities?
Well, I mean that Star Trek's reality is sort of flexible. I mean, like, from time to time, you know, as viewers, we sort of like roll with the punches when, you know, the stakes change and the sort of context that we're watching the show in is altered. Like, sometimes it's, you know, sort of a strict material reality, and sometimes it becomes more theatrical, where characters aren't necessarily, you know, just a being talking. They are representing a idea or concept or feeling or movement. And this is like one of those sort of like, it sort of lightly gets there, but not as far as some other ones. I mean, pretty much any time, you know, they go into somebody's head, they end up in some sort of set where people pretend to be parts of that person's mind. I mean, it happens on Star Trek way more than you'd think, but it's an interesting thing. And I don't think that Star Trek has ever really 100% nailed down which side it's more of. Because it does sort of fluctuate between those realities. And I think sometimes, like, you know, different fans hate certain episodes. I mean, Brandon Braga did this a million times with dream sequences. And like, you know, you see these dream sequences, and it's like, that's the show. Sometimes that's the show. Sometimes it isn't. It's hard to say which one is correct. But I find it interesting.
We see that later in the follow-up to this episode, where all the crew members of DS9 are actually playing the roles of the various Dax hosts from the past.
Which is also very similar to the episode where they're in Bashir's mind. And all the people on the station represent parts of Bashir. I mean, it happens a lot. And sometimes they don't even have like the plot conceit to make it make sense. Sometimes like characters just are kind of an idea. And we accept them because the idea is sound, but we know that for the time being, this character is not just a thing. You can't deal with this problem by, you know, shooting it. You've got to deal with it in the way you would deal with the actual problem in the reality. It's interesting to me. I wish that somebody would, like, you know, like write down in a book somewhere, we're not doing this anymore, or from now on, we're always doing this. That way we would know which reality we're in.
Well, if they did it all the time, they could save a lot of money on casting because they wouldn't need to bring in, you know, other actors to play the different parts. They could just double up with the regular cast.
Well, I don't think we need to give Star Trek any more ideas on how to save money. They've been doing very well for a very long time. Although now, apparently, that's no longer part of the plan. Now the plan is just throw money at it. See what happens. That's all right.
And lens flares. Don't forget those.
Everybody loves lens flares. You've got Photoshop. It's the thing to do.
That's right. And barrel rolls.
Everyone loves those.
Yeah.
There are. So talking about the regular cast members playing the parts of all the past hosts, just bring it back to in this episode where we get this idea. I guess it's not the first time really that we've had this idea, because I guess we had it in Dax a little bit, where we had the whole trial with the really grouchy Bajoran judge who just wanted to have lunch and just call a recess all the time. But this idea that the host has, maybe they're repressed, but has these memories from past hosts that under certain circumstances could resurface. And of course, that's the whole central plot of this episode. This whole memory of a past host, Joran, having committed a murder. And let's just talk a little bit about the idea of fleshing out, if you want to call it that, the Trill, and how those memories from past hosts make this species of alien maybe a bit different from some of the others.
I don't think it's really all that well delineated. I mean, like, occasionally they you know, like, Deep Space Nine has moments where Trills seem to be like sort of a composite. They have all of the previous memories, and then, like, sometimes it's kind of like, no, not really. Like, I'm like, she's not Curzon, but, like, you know, if Curzon, you know, was really good at tennis, she'd be really good at tennis. You know, if there's a lot of things like that. There are a lot of characteristics that are carried over, but when it's convenient, those characteristics that you don't want to carry over don't.
Well, I mean,
and they play very fast and very, very loose with the rules about what is carried over.
And I mean, that kind of also leads into the thing which I sort of always had a problem with. It's sort of the same thing that I have a problem with Data, which is, like, you've got Dax, and even if it is, you know, 25-year-old Jadzia Dax, she has, you know, like they say, flat out, like, all the memories and all the experiences of all of her past hosts. That makes her a very wise and knowledgeable individual. How is she not, you know, a commander?
Oh, no, no.
I mean,
I think that's, I'm well, pushing it.
Okay.
I mean, there is some limitation to the person that is in the body.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, like, my counter to that is that, you know, they're like people in their 80s right now that, but, like, you wouldn't trust with scissors.
Okay, but that's not the case. I mean, you know, like, well, Ezri, for example, I know it's a weird case, you know. They wrote her to be, you know,
yeah,
such that she's kind of messed up, but, you know.
Because she's not a suitable host. Right. Although apparently half the population is suitable.
Well, but she didn't have the training to deal with it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, whatever. It is what,
yeah,
it is.
I know. Whatever. Yeah. We all know.
Yeah.
We all know what the deal is.
Yeah.
But we all wave our hands and say, it's okay. You know, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
Show must go on.
Mm-hmm. This,
right.
That girl's pretty. Let's get her involved.
Well, you may bring up an interesting contrast, actually, Mike, with Jadzia mentioned several times in this episode she spent 3 years being initiated before she actually got the symbiont. And then Ezri, meanwhile, was just totally thrown into the situation, and that just had to be.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, this starts out with the idea that Bashir says that if a host is not suitable for being joined, then the symbiont and the host would both be dead within days. So I'm just following the train of thought through this episode. So this is what we learn. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what about Ezri? I mean, Ezri was not intending to be joined. Was it just lucky chance, as it often is in Star Trek, that she could be joined? Or is there something more going on here? And then, as you say, as Max just mentioned, apparently 50% of the population can be joined. We find out as this episode goes on that there aren't enough symbionts, and so they have to really pick and choose who could be joined. And I get the impression from what the doctor said that this would be Dr. Renal, the Trill doctor, that, like, the whole population would be clamoring to be joined if they knew that they could. And but then I also thought it was weird to have a 3-year initiate process, Shar, as you said. But I guess that's the case of them trying to determine if someone is really truly suitable to play host to a symbiont for the course of their lifespan.
I mean, to me, it sounds like pretty much any sort of licensing system we have in present day, you know, society. I mean, I've known somebody who like went through, you know, like a medical program, and they were taking the tests, and they were like, oh, I gotta know like all the bones, like every single name of every single bone. And I'm like, why? Why do you need to know the names of all the bones? He's like, well, basically, it's just hard for no reason, just to make sure that you're serious. Like, basically, like, the idea is, like, they force you to do incredibly tedious work in order to memorize lots and lots of nonsensical data, because that proves that you mean it, that you are willing to sacrifice for the goal. I mean, like, ultimately, what this episode is saying is, at the end of the day, all of this initiate training, all of the screening, all of it is just, like, there's only, like, 20 of these guys that aren't joined yet. So, I mean, you know, that's a small pool. It's not a huge pool.
Right.
I mean, like, it's hard to pick people, so you got to pick the right people. And of course, it's less, you know, and it's an aspect of societal control. But I mean, it allows the people. I mean, it's an aristocracy in a weird way.
And I mean, like, that's one of the problems that I have with this episode, which is, you know, I don't remember exactly what the rule was prior to it, or if they just made up the only, you know, 2% of the population can be joined, or whatever it is, but or they would die. But to me, it seems like, regardless, it doesn't matter. It's almost like they created a problem to say that they had a problem in this episode, so that they could then justify the plot of the episode. I mean, to me, there's no real difference between...
Hold on.
What?
Don't accuse Star Trek of making up a problem so they'd have a problem.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My bad.
I mean, wait, no. That's the show.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I forgot. That's how it works.
But, you know, I mean, why is this, you know... And I mean, like the idea that the Trill present, you know, as like, you know, well, if people knew about this, then our society would collapse. No, it wouldn't. You know, it would keep on going, doing exactly what it's doing now.
I disagree.
Really?
No, I do. I think that there is a significant benefit to actually having this a secret, because I mean, imagine. Okay, let's say hypothetically we were Trills. Right? And let's say that being a host is a really, really amazing thing. And you actually do get, like, a significant benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, it's not just like, oh, my God, I got an extra person in my head. It's like, I've got an extra person that knows hundreds of years of history. I've got an advantage in pretty much any endeavor I go into in the future of my life. Okay? That is worth a lot of money. The people in power would immediately take control. And no longer would it be selected, no longer would it be chosen. It would not be made by people who essentially answer only to themselves, which in a weird way, like that sort of lifetime appointment thing, it's why Supreme Court judges are lifetime appointments. It means that they can't be bought because they're there, they're done. You can't buy them. That means that they keep control amongst like essentially an idea, an ideal. So these people are maintaining an ideal so that, you know, essentially the people with the power keep it forever, because that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, I mean, that's why most conspiracies in the real world happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you on this, Max. I think this developed into a very elitist type of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, in a way, it's better than the alternative, which is it being completely taken over by money and power.
Yeah.
One other thing.
I don't totally disagree with you there.
it's a compromise, but you know, sometimes you gotta compromise. Sometimes you gotta join with the Romulans to fight the Dominion, man. Sometimes you gotta do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Despite their weird fashion sense.
One other thing, and I'm surprised that they actually kind of like hit this point home in this episode, because they could have glossed over it and made the coincidence, you know, not as big. But, you know, it also does the Star Trek thing of like, this person who is a regular on our show is like the most significant person of their type. You know, like not only is she like the one where they discover that the thing is capable of the population, whatever, it's also, you know, she's the only Trill to get rejected and then approved for, you know.
Okay, but at the same time, don't you imagine that everybody has some sort of, you know, incident of like the intangibly, you know, like improbable thing, and we all have like thousands of things happen to us every day. One out of those things is always a one in a thousand possibility.
Okay, but to
so there are exceptions all the time.
But to have two of those, I mean...
Okay, so you're saying that having the emissary of the Bajoran people be the leader of the space station on which the only trill to have ever been rejected and then reapproved by the board...
they don't have anything to do
with
each other.
This isn't a huge contribution?
Well, you know, I mean, that is what it is. But, I mean, just within her, even, you know? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's just one of those
things. I know what you're saying, Mike. This is actually similar to what Shara and I were talking about in news when we were... talking about whether they should cross over series in a movie. And I was saying that for me, especially when they get into the novels, there's a tendency for writers to just focus on a few characters. And these characters represent everything in the Star Trek universe. And so these same characters will show up everywhere. And these same characters know each other. And they, you know, had these past experiences together. It just becomes a little bit too convenient and too much like a bottle sometimes.
Well, I mean, in a way, I think that's because the sort of expanded universe of Star Trek sort of follows in the model of Star Trek, which is, you know, it started as a TV show. And like, so they're essentially, you know, like most TV shows, I mean, almost all of them do this to some extent. You know, they have, you know, like 10 people that do everything. And the reason they do everything is because those are the 10 people that you have to use in that episode. They're on the cast. You've got to give them some lines. So you give them some lines.
Unless they're Travis, you don't have to give Travis any lines.
Well, you know, that was damage control, I think, more than anything else. sorry. You know, but the other thing about that, though, the other side of it is, unlike a TV show where you have like a group of writers who are writing these adventures together, I get the impression with like expanded universe stuff, you've got like an author who has a really great idea and they think that they're being, you know, cool by bringing these people together. But what they're not taking into account is every other author of every other book has the same exact thought.
If you want to like criticize general expanded universe fiction, I mean, like you could do it, but I mean, it's kind of not worth it. I mean, it's a place where people can, you know, explore other ideas. But I mean, these are people who had an idea for a story based on something they saw on a TV show. So, I mean, like, ultimately, it's going to harry around some artifacts of that medium.
Sure, yeah.
And it's almost impossible to completely remove it. I mean, you could theoretically, you know, if Tolstoy were alive and you were like, hey, Tolstoy, write a Star Trek novel. He'd be like, all right, 13 years later, he would have an outline. And one day, he would eventually have a finished version, and it would be amazing. But you know for a fact, Kirk would be in it. Sisko would be in it. Janeway would show up for like half the book. Yeah. Not, she's still in the Delta Quadrant, but a wormhole brought him. Because that's what you do. You tie your character together. You bring the worlds together and you deal with that. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that it sounds weird.
I certainly hope that Chekhov would be in Tolstoy's Star Trek novel, because otherwise... if he had another one of those missed opportunities.
I would hope that he would kill him off immediately.
On the first page, in the prologue.
Yeah, Chekhov screams like a girl, dead.
He gets burned to death.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
And Ilea's not there because she's dead, too.
Yeah.
I'm referring to our commentary on the motion picture, which we recorded earlier today.
Anybody who's seen the motion picture knows what that scream is. You cannot forget that scream.
Yeah,
I occasionally wake up in a cold sweat thinking of that scream.
I do hope that is one of the Trek tones that you can now purchase through iTunes, in fact.
It better be.
Yeah.
It
should be. It's got to be. It's got to be.
I would totally
make that your ringtone.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, if your phone rings and that's the sound, I'm going to break it.
Yeah,
just snap it in half. That's a horrible idea. That sounds really creepy and disturbing.
Is it even creepier than the Odo KitchenAid mixer?
Not even close.
Just checking.
It's way less creepy than that.
What if the Odo KitchenAid mixer, when it finishes mixing, it does that scream to let you know that it's done?
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I would chop it to pieces
while it's wearing a mask.
I would chop it to pieces and microwave each piece until it was just a pile of melted goo on the floor. And I would say, look, he's in his natural state.
Yeah, exactly.
And you, Mike, would be what? Like, that's
how
awesome.
How is this wrong?
That's totally awesome, yeah.
Yeah, how is this wrong? You're not proving your case, buddy. And I'll put him in a bucket and it'll be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He would be really cool. I want that bucket. That's what I want. I want the bucket of goo. Although that sounds really gross now that I'm thinking about it.
Kind of
I don't
does,
want that. But... So don't send me a bucket of goo. That would be creepy.
All right. Oh, wow. Well, Michael, in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
You wanted to talk about what you call Michael Piller's magic show.
Okay, well, yeah, this was in... I read it on both Memory Alpha and then also in the Star Trek Companion. Apparently, the origin of this episode comes from the fact that Michael Piller went to see a magic show, which was actually performed by the guy who plays... what's his name? You know... is it Joran Trill? Joran Dax.
Dax.
I don't know if his last name's whatever. Trill. Everyone's last name's Dax. Trill, I guess.
Yeah, no, Dax. Yeah,
Joran Dax.
THX
yeah.
Cup face yeah. guy.
Joe the Trill. But he performed a magic show with the multiple mask thingy, and Michael Piller was like, oh, that's really cool. So he hired a mutual friend of theirs to write a script. And then they gave the script to the writing staff, and the writing staff is like, what are we supposed to do with this? You know, he even apparently sent the writing staff to the show to watch it. And they're like, we don't know what, you know, and they, you know, went through a bunch of permutations to start off with like a magic show coming to Deep Space Nine and there being a killer. Then it became an Odo story, you know, quite obviously. Mm-hmm. And then Ron Moore was finally like, oh, well, this could be like a metaphor for Dax's hosts and everything.
Yeah.
And that's what they settled on. And I think the idea of basing an episode on a magic show, not the best idea in the world, you know? I mean...
No.
Michael Piller's awesome, done a lot of good stuff. I think at this stage in the game, he's probably a little more focused on Voyager, you know, which is probably why he didn't write the thing himself.
Yeah.
It just seems like, I mean, I know I've done this before many times in my life where I've been like,
you've come up with
cool
an idea
thing.
For a story based on a magic show?
Well, no, the equivalent, you okay. know, yeah. that's a cool thing.
I know. That's
I
how,
should totally do this other
that's
thing.
That's how most things we do yeah. get started.
Right. And that's why most of them are terrible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I like to imagine that this was, you know, like the story breaking session for the entire season. And they got like 25 episodes. And he's like, all right, we're done. And I'm like, no, we got one more. And he's like, guy with a bunch of masks. I'm out.
You would hope that's what it was, but that's not what it was.
That's the version I choose to believe.
All right. Well, go ahead. Keep mm-hmm. on believing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's problematic to me.
The idea of a magic show coming to the station and there's a killer in the magic show, it sounds essentially like a rehash of Conscience of the King.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Or any time a carnival goes to any town ever.
Yeah.
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 A lot of things in this episode, yeah, it feels like there was an idea, and I can pull some good things out of this episode, but then there's also this feeling that maybe they didn't quite know where they were going the whole time.
You kind of mentioned that the ending of this episode feels a tiny bit rushed, a little bit. Like, they weren't really sure how to wrap it up. And so, okay, we're going to do this. And Dax strips down and
always
goes
a good
into
start
the
to a story.
Calgon pool of electrical symbiont things and hugs Duran.
Right.
And that's how
so
they resolve it.
She basically, at least if this had been Enterprise, she would have gotten naked and gotten into the pool with all the electrocules, right?
Right.
It's funny you should say that, because...
He thinks about that every day.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I went to a convention shortly before or after this thing came out, right around the time, I think it might have been a week or two after this came out.
Never a good move.
No, and the guest of honor was Terry Farrell.
Mm.
And, of course, that was the thing that happened at the end of the night, so... at some point over the course of the day, it was probably Richard Arnold.
She took a bath.
No, well, she wasn't there. But Richard Arnold, you know, was there. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, that episode, you know, with where she gets into the, into the goo. Originally, they wanted her to wear a G-string for that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't too happy about that. You guys got to ask her about that because, oh, man. And then everyone laughs and they're like, oh, man, this is going to be a good story, right? Because that's what happens at conventions. That's how they work. So
yeah.
She comes out, you know, at the end of the night, you know, and sure enough, someone gets up there and says, so we're supposed to ask you about how for that one scene, they wanted you to wear a G-string. And she's like, yeah. And they're like, yeah. So tell us about that. And she's like, they wanted me to do it. I said, I'm not doing it.
That is a great story. That should be an episode of Deep Space Nine.
And then there was just
throw some masks in there, bro.
Yeah, there
totally
you go.
Totally solid concept for an episode.
And then, of course, there was just dead silence after that. You know, very, very awkward silence. And it's like, well, yeah, that didn't quite go how the MC planned. And
yeah, there's this woman. She's an accomplished actor. Let's ask her about her being almost naked.
Yeah.
That's not uncool at all.
No.
Oh, but that's how it goes.
You got to have the masks with the G-strings. That's all.
There you go.
God, that sounds terrifying. It's like a Silent Hill monster.
It's like something out of Eyes Wide Shut.
No, it sounds like Saturday night at Char's house.
How would you know?
Because you tell us in the other side of the room after you've had too much vodka.
Shush.
So that's if Terry tough. Had been a little more clever about it, she should have told them, why don't you ask Avery next time about the episode in which they wanted him to wear a G-string.
There you go.
I think she was a little too upset to see the humor in the situation, but
it's just not cool.
It's a really awkward.
We're a little late to say, hey, people at conventions, the actors are people too. Don't treat them like props.
Yeah,
but I mean,
that's
what happens.
But you have to think that by, let's say, fifth, sixth season Enterprise, we may have actually gotten an episode in which the entire crew had to go into some pool of water somewhere, all wearing G-strings, because it felt like that's where it was headed at times, right?
Yeah.
We got to see what's underneath those blue undies, right?
Exactly. Except for the scene where Porthos has on the G-string.
Oh,
that
good.
Was yeah, we could
a little
skip that.
Bit of a stretch.
Yeah,
oh, you
that.
Made it dark. You made it dark.
Yes, we go there.
That's usually my thing. All right, that's cool.
All right, well, at this point, we are in the caves. We are in the murky pools of Calgon. And
or Precog juice.
Right. Well, there's the guy here who I think we both called, Char, you and I, creepy guardian pool boy, independently of one another. I mean, isn't this guy creepy? Like, he hangs out in caves, taking care of electric eels in a murky pool. And he was just like the pool boy to me.
You know what he reminds me of?
Brett Spiner?
I was going to say a movie theater projectionist.
Oh,
that's good.
Yeah.
Because he works in the dark all the time.
By himself. He's taking care of these like, you know, stringy snake-looking things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Making
Watches
sure they run
people
okay.
from up high without pants.
For those of you who don't know, both Max and I were projectionists for over a decade, so.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you're speaking from personal experience, Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't.
I figured. Okay.
I'm not going to speak for Max, but I didn't find the guy to be creepy. I found him to be normal. He was dedicated.
I was out of the room when the scene came up when he first started talking, but like I heard his voice and I was like, that sounds exactly like Brent Spiner. He has like the exact same voice. It's really weird. And I went into the room and I was like, oh, he looks a little bit like him. But more bird-like.
I think he has a little bit of a creepy look to him. And then just, his whole
For
demeanor.
For me, it was a bit of how he was talking to everyone, especially how he was talking to Jadzia. And he's like, oh, you're Jadzia. I know. I have pictures of you pinned all over the wall back here in the cave.
Yeah.
He's kind of had that look in his eye. You know, like I see these kind of people on the train. And in Japan, we have women's only cars on the train. So during rush hour, mainly in the morning, there are cars on the train which men are not allowed to go in, only women. And it's because there are these creepy guys who will try to fill women up, or they'll stick cameras and try to take shots up their skirts. Or
I've heard about those people. You know, they're called really Japanese men. Together.
But it's not like everyone's like that. It's a tiny percentage of people, but it is to the point where we have to have these women's only cars. And I'm watching this guy here, and the way he was talking to Jadzia, and that was the vibe I was getting. Like,
that's just
kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Just because a guy works all day in a cave, that doesn't mean he's creepy. I mean, he might be a dragon. It's one of those.
No.
He could be.
It's caves, man.
I don't know.
No, he seemed like a very lonely creeper guy where it's a miracle that he's kind of got a job. I mean, I think in today's world, he would be that guy who's still living in his mom's basement playing video games all day, every single day. And we know that there's those people out there, they're antisocial, they have no social skills because they don't interact with people.
They always ask actors at conventions about G-strings.
Right.
Oh, it's terrible. Right. Yeah.
And this guy, well, and what really got me was he kind of gets a little bitter about his life, describing his day. Yeah, I never see the sunlight. And these things, they're so pesky, and they're never happy. And he just seems kind of like an unhappy person. I almost think maybe he got relegated to this job because the other people on the surface of the world didn't know what to do with him. And for their own protection, they put him there.
It did feel a little bit like that, didn't it? It's like they talk when they're in the medical facility and they mention the guardians. And of course, they do the whole thing. Guardians? What are those? Oh, well, the guardians are the so-and-so. But they painted them like, the guardians are, it's like the highest level job you can have in Trill society. You're protecting the guardian. And then you get down there and you did really kind of feel like, this is the place where no one wants to be. And he's kind of stuck down here.
It's kind of sad. It's kind of like a hospice worker. It's kind of depressing in general, it's a sad job where you do hard work, but it's important. Kind of sucks though. Although, God, that's gotta be, you're always yelling about Jordy being jerks. You know, he's got a very hard job. This guy's got a worse job. Here's the thing. They don't talk about it, but those things are life forms. They poop.
Right.
He's got to deal with that. That's ridiculously hard. And they get angry. What do they do when they're angry? They shoot electricity at each other. That's got to be a ridiculously hard job.
That's true.
Oh, I didn't wash my shoes well enough. Oh, they're zapping me. He could be killed.
I mean, you would think that they would be. I mean, you know, they say, like you were saying, they do say that they're treated with treated as like having a very important job. And I mean, you'd think that they would if the Trill, the symbionts are as special and important as, they make them out to be. You would think that the Guardians would be really on top of their game, but like Secret Service almost or something.
No, I think he is on top of his game for this job. He knows it very well, almost to the point of like, wow, dude, need to get a life. He's referring to Jadzia. Oh yeah, I know you. Mm-hmm. I know you well.
He seems oddly obsessive, but I mean, like, I imagine that if any other Trill came in there, he'd be like, hey, you know who I am? He'd be like, yeah, I know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You owe me $5. One of your previous hosts.
Right. I'm not saying he was infatuated with just Jadzia. I think he would know everything about everybody, but that makes him even more of a creeper.
Yeah.
Well, Max brings up a good point. Now, in Dax, we explored the issue of whether a current host is responsible for the actions of the past host in the case of, say, a murder. But what about small debts? Do current hosts need to pay back debts that were incurred by past hosts? I mean, if you borrow money to buy a hamburger or something? Does that carry forward? And why was this never explored?
Well, because I think that like one of the first episodes they dealt with, like it might have been the first season, the one where like the woman, the guy actually was a traitor, and like they pinned it on Curzon.
Well, that was Dax.
Yeah.
The episode called Dax.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously that kind of covers it. I mean, like if I suppose the question is, had Curzon actually been a murderer and a treasonous, you know, expatriate? I mean, like then there's a question. But I mean, I guess they kind of edged around that issue by not really answering it, having it be like, oh, I guess not. I guess it wasn't.
You know what? That would have made for like a good B story in season 7 with Ezri, where like a Ferengi came after her for some sort of debt that Jadzia owed because of, you know.
Right. Like you owe me a half a bar of ladanum.
Right.
And she's like, I am not going to give you that. And right. He's like, but come on.
Yeah.
I could totally get a soda.
They could have totally done that.
Yeah. And she's like, no, it's the principle of the thing.
Right.
And then he's like, what if I gave you some stem bolts? And he's like, I don't want no stem bolt. It's a terrible idea for an episode. It's slightly better than a magic trick being the basis for an episode, but it's not a great idea for an episode.
I don't know. I think for a B story, but it worked well.
I think as a B story, it could work quite well.
Yeah.
It's as reasonable as some of the B stories that we got on The Next Generation. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
So the creepy pool boy here, though, he tells them, yeah, he does know the symbionts well, and he tells them, you don't make them cranky. You know, you don't want a cranky symbiont. And I was just picturing, like, how cranky do these guys get? You know, like, they start demanding, they want M&Ms, but they want all the blue ones picked out. They want bendy straws. And they only want Mexican Coca-Cola in the pool.
Right.
This is the stuff you learn by living with them in the caves for so long. And the people above ground, they don't know this stuff. They come down, they're like rookies down there.
Well, I mean, if the M&Ms, I'm behind them on that. I hope that they do that. Blue M&Ms are terrible.
You would be a cranky symbiont.
They
know
killed
it.
Light brown M&Ms and replaced them with blue M&Ms. Never forget the brown M&M. It's my Alamo.
This is what I have to deal with.
That's where Max is going to build his Alamo.
There you go. Right.
On the grave for the light brown M&M.
All right. Well, as we head towards the end of the discussion here, let's get to the very end of the episode. And what I felt was a bit of a lack of closure. And it all comes here in the pool where we are right now. And for me, I mean, I didn't really have a problem with the idea of Jadzia going into the pool and Duran, I guess basically an eel turned into Duran. I don't know, we're supposed to visualize this, but anyway, they have their hug, their electric hug.
Yeah.
They have the electric hug, and that all was okay with me, but then it's just like, it's done, and then we're back on the station.
Yeah.
And I wanted more closure for Jadzia herself there, and I felt like it should have happened in that moment. There should have been more to it than just this. I don't know. Did you feel this way?
I didn't have a problem with that scene. I had a problem with the little coda or whatever you want to call it on the station, mainly because of the sort of like formal aspect of ending it with her playing the little piano thing.
Dude, that's how Star Trek episodes work.
No, but it's not. I mean, like, if you notice, and they do it in the teaser as well, like where they end it with like the only sound being like the you know her playing the piano.
It's like the inner light with Picard and the flute.
I guess so, but it worked better with that, I think, because he was like
better
playing the full song or something. It really felt like the episode just kind of stopped, you know, most of the time, if you look at like any, like a commercial break or anything on any episode of Star Trek, they might play that one note, you know, like that ding, like right before they go to break.
Yeah.
And that is sort of like, I don't know if it's just, you know, become like almost like a Pavlovian response or something now where it's like, oh, okay, so now we're going to commercial and I accept it. Whereas like, they did it in the teaser, and they did it again at the end of the final act. It just ends on like source music, and it feels like they really just stopped. like they just stopped like shooting or whatever and ended the episode.
Yeah.
It just is really jarring.
They just ran out of coverage.
Right. They just ran out. They're just like, oh, and then we're done, you know?
Yeah.
That bothers me.
Not me.
Out of time. Let's go.
Exactly.
Doesn't bother
it does
me.
Feel like out of time. It happens often where I feel like in episodes they have to hit this 40. I guess with DS9 it was about a 45-minute mark. By the end of Voyager it was 42 minutes, and you know TOS it was like 53 that they had to work with. But it's like they're getting to the end and they realize, well, we've got to wrap this up, and so they just end the episode. And if you look back at it, like in this one, they spent so much time. I actually had in my notes that symbionts really know how to tech the tech. And we should print that on a t-shirt because there's so much teching of the tech that goes on in this episode where they're talking about all the different levels and all the different chemical imbalances.
Isoramines.
Isoboramines. I think we should have a drinking game for every time they say that word in this episode, because you could get nice and trashy drunk.
Hey, when we were coming up with rules for the drinking game, we were deliberately trying to not kill anyone.
Yeah.
That would murder people.
Yeah, right.
This is true. Yeah, doing a shot of really any kind of liquor. Yeah. Stronger than beer, you'd be hurting if not dead the next day. Yeah,
I was cool with the way the episode ended.
But there's still like even with the teching the tech and that taking up a lot of time or whatever, it's still, I'm not really sure that the problem would have been solved, because you still have to deal with the fact that it's, you know,
an episode based on a magic trick.
Well, there's that. No. But in terms of this specific problem, you know, it's commercial television. You've got, you know, four acts and a teaser, and you need to pace those out individually too. So really, you kind of have to just take a look at like
three and a half cliffhangers.
You got to take a look at the final act and see if you can rework whatever's in there to give you some more time at the end. And I don't know if they necessarily could do that.
Well, sometimes the smartest thing is when they, you know, sacrifice the actual dramatic structure of the episode in order for it, the memory of it, to work better. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like when I watch these episodes, when I watch Deep Space Nine, I did this, you know, a few months ago. I like turned it on and I'm like, all right, Emissary. That wasn't that great. And then, you know, like a few seasons in, I'm like, all right, it's getting good. Oh, Equilibrium. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, come to terms with your serial killer past life. Excellent. Fast forward. Done. All right. Let's move on. You know, I wanted to get through it because it's kind of lame. So when we're done with it, I'm okay. I'm okay that it's kind of a half-assed ending, because, I mean, you know what's happening. I mean, like there's a person in your memory and you don't want to have this person there. But at the same time, you can't just excise it without excising a part of yourself. So you got to come to terms with it. Hence, her going into a pool of milk and hugging her past self is a really, really explicit metaphor of coming to terms with the sins of your past. Job done. Let's move on. Next episode.
I kind of agree with Max on this. You know, I would not want there to be like another. I mean, you
get
know,
what
you
it
get
means.
In, you get out.
Yeah,
you know,
you get
it's
what
like,
it means.
It's like the old, who is it, Roger Corman, who used to say like, "Monster's dead, the movie's over."
Yes,
that kind of thing.
So you might as well start running the credits while you're stabbing the monster,
right?
Which he basically did a few times.
So in this case, you wanted to see them hugging, and you wanted the credits to just start running over.
I'd be okay with
like,
it.
Like out of the milky water. Just coming
in. Sounds like
they
a good
ooze
visual.
Ooze upward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just, you know, just a hard cut.
Hard cut.
Just a hard cut. Job done, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Sisko walks out and is like, you understand what happened. Move on with your lives. The episode is over.
I can see what you're saying there. And yeah, I think I can agree with you. If it were done that way, I would have dispensed with the whole keyboard stuff back. Like I said, at the station, though. I mean, if that's how you're going to end it, let's end it with the hug. She comes to terms with her past self, and then roll credits.
That's how they should have done it. You know, they should have cut out that last scene, and then I think maybe it would have worked better. It would have had more closure for you, you know.
It would have had more impact, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like cutting off the coda to an episode of Star Trek, it definitely, at that point, is like it's almost impossible. I mean, it's like it was so part of the format. They
But I mean, like if you look at Deep Space Nine, like they start doing that like right around this time.
I guess
there's a lot of episodes that do that, whereas you know previous Trek shows hadn't.
Yeah, a couple of them.
I mean,
did,
like
but,
you look
but
at like Progress.
Still,
I mean, there's a lot of them that do that, and it works
still,
really well.
There are still examples of that ending, that coda being really forced into an episode that otherwise does not need it.
Of course.
I mean, like it's part of the format that Star Trek has a really hard time breaking free of because, like, I mean, they were a revolutionary show and they defined a medium. Mm-hmm. And they were like locked into it. I mean, they built a gilded cage for themselves, and like you need a psycho to come in and just smash all of the stuff in order to get out of that. And that's why they hired J.J. Abrams, because he's insane.
But he's good. He's good at breaking cages.
He loves breaking stuff. He breaks stuff, puts a red ball there, leaves.
Yeah.
Doesn't even tell you what it's for. Doesn't even tell you what it's for. I will never give up on this. Never letting it go. I will take this hatred to my grave.
All right. Well, we are past an hour, so let's give our final thoughts on the episode. Anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't touch on, and then just your final thoughts. So how about Char? Why don't you jump in?
You know, I don't know if I have a whole lot to add. Just despite all that's been said, I still love this episode. You can't take that away from me. I do love it. For all of its flaws, I just don't care. It's a nostalgic favorite. Back in the day, I just really watched this one over and over. I liked it. Yeah, I'll give it probably 4 eels out of 5.
Cool.
Yeah, ultimately, I think my feeling on this episode is it's not tremendously terrible, but it's not tremendously noteworthy either. I guess from a show like Deep Space Nine, I'm expecting more out of them. And I think this is right around the time where they sort of like turned the corner and went from being a good show to being like a really great show. And this episode is kind of like a holdover from them just being a good show. And it's one of those episodes where it feels like very formulaic and very, you know, run of the mill Star Trek in a sense.
It's not just by the book. It's like, hey guys, this is the book.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I can totally live without it. I can watch it and it's not like offensively bad to me, but once I watch it, it completely leaves my mind. And I mean, I guess some of the things that they inadvertently set up in this episode in order to tell the story, they then, you know, use later on, which is something that Deep Space Nine did an excellent job doing. And I mean, like Ezri Dax, you know, you could say that, oh, well, without this episode, there would be no Ezri. But then again, they would have just come up with another explanation to get her on the ship.
Yeah, they would have put Tech in
right.
In parentheses, yeah. And the job would have been done.
Right. So ultimately, I mean, I think that this is a completely harmless and yet completely unnoteworthy episode.
Well, I'm gonna bring it all full circle and say that that this episode happened. And you can't write it out of history, so you got to come to terms with it. So I'm going to go into the pool and hug it and say, it's okay. It's okay. I accept you. But you disappoint me. You disappoint me every day. That's how it happens.
Right. That's good.
That's so brilliant.
Well, for me, it's a decent episode. I think I'm with Mike, kind of that I can watch it and I'm fine when I'm watching it, but it's not really an episode that I dwell upon or look back at or I want to go back and rewatch often. I found it interesting in our discussion here how Mike and Max, how you described how it should have ended. And I think that changed my view of the ending a bit. On the one hand, because if they're going to go in and they're going to take the time to try to explore the background of the Trill host symbiote relationship and Jadzia, I kind of wanted them to do a little bit more of that than they did. And that's why I kind of felt a little bit left out in the cold at the end. But yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's a decent episode. And like you say, Mike, it is at that turning point where DS9 is starting to become a great series. We're kind of in that flux where we have some good, decent episodes. We have some great episodes. We're kind of in there. So I guess if I have to rate this one, I'm going to give it 5 KitchenAid Odo whisk strokes.
5 broken microwaves.
Okay, then I give it 2 magic tricks.
Nice.
That's crazy. Great. It's not that good.
All right.
All right, great. Yeah. Thanks for joining us today. And before we go, Mike and Max, we, of course, mentioned your new show coming up on Trek FM, but tell everyone where they can also find you around the internets.
You can find us at CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do audio commentaries for movies and TV shows and the occasional other odd thing. And actually, if you tune in on Sunday, you can hear our commentary for Star Trek The Motion Picture featuring the one and only Charlene.
Ta-da!
Mm-hmm. You're going to time that.
Yeah.
Good time. We're also other places, but there are too many things to remember.
Well, if anyone wants to hit you up on Twitter, where should they go?
At ComTrackStars.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you as part of the Trek Film family with the new show as well.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us. You know,
it's going to be fun.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. So hopefully we won't let you down.
Most of the time.
Most
Sometimes
of the time.
We will.
Yeah.
Like Equilibrium. Ah.
Well, Char, that's another Ready Room in the bag, and another feature without Gregory.
Yeah, I tell you what, I kind of miss the Greg unit, don't you?
I do miss the Greg unit. But at least I just got word from Greg unit as we were recording. He has secured transport back from the Breen homeworld, and he will be with us next week for our Voyager show.
Oh, good. Good. Glad to hear it. I'm glad that he's going to be back safe from the Breen homeworld.
He is. He might be a little cold, but he's going to be back.
Okay. He'll recover. That's the important thing.
He will.
Good. And then he can totally just... I'm not sure what he's going to do, but he's probably going to get some kind of revenge for what I did in the intro.
I think he will.
So...
He had some connection problems in the Breen homeworld as far as downloading podcasts. So when he gets back, he's going to have to listen both to last week's show, where we had our whole bit about him at the beginning of the feature, and this week's show and the beginning of this show. So he's going to be after us, I think.
Oh, dear. I think I might need to run away for a few days myself then.
Either that or get another bottle of vodka.
Well, that's true. Vodka cures all, except for hangovers.
All right. Well, it was really fun having Mike and Max on the show. You know, I've listened to them on other shows, never had them on the Ready Room before, and that was great fun, and looking forward to their new show coming up on our network.
Yeah, absolutely. And if this discussion that we had for this episode is any indication of what we can expect out of their new show on the Trek FM network, I think... the audience is in for a treat, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they want to share their thoughts on Equilibrium or anything else that we talked about in today's show. I have a feeling that our discussion about which series would make the best film series will probably generate some feedback. At least people will hit us up on Twitter with that anyway.
Oh, I imagine we'll get a few comments, yes.
Probably. So if you want to send us a message, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there, and that message will come directly to us. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, over on G+ at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus. You can find us on app.net or ADN if you're on there at username trekfm. And of course, you can find us on Twitter, where both Char and myself, along with Greg and Landrew, are tweeting from the same account, and that's username TrekFM. And Char, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, my personal account is Oh the Profanity. And sometimes there is profanity, just to warn you.
Sometimes, but I have to say, you are really quite well behaved on the Twitters.
I try to be sometimes. I'm not on the vodka all the time.
Not all the time.
Not all the time.
No, you're well behaved on Twitter, I must say.
Oh, well, thank you, I think.
Oh, you don't want to be well behaved, I take it.
I'm not sure. Is that a compliment? Or, I mean, am I not living up to my title? I'm not sure now. I'm very confused.
I think you could let the profanities fly a little bit more often if you wanted, you know, to live up to your moniker.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'll see what I can do about that. That shouldn't be hard to accomplish.
I don't think so. Not with our gang and not with our crew.
No.
Not at all.
Indeed, I think I might get some encouragement from certain people, Colin.
I think so.
Yeah. Among many others. Because they like it when I am naughty. And they are naughty themselves.
They like it when anyone's naughty, I have to say.
This is true. Yes, it snowballs. Everybody gets in on it. Just another day in the life of the Trek FM crew, basically. But I love it.
It definitely is. All right, well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is CBrianJones. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm tweeting about, of course, Star Trek. Also, music, Japan, design, college football, random song lyrics, pictures of Kirk Bear,
yes.
Who went with me to Ryza the other day and got into a little bit of mischief around the shrine.
Yeah, I noticed this. Looked like they had a nice time on Ryza.
They did, yeah. And got a few comments from passers-by as they said, hey, look, he's taking a picture with a character. Which, you know,
yeah,
shouldn't be that surprising in a country where 40-year-old women still walk around with Hello Kitty purses, but...
Right. You'd think. Well, that's their
problem.
They're
just not familiar with the Kirk Bear.
That's right. Yeah, and we love the Kirk Bear.
We love the Kirk Bear. We really do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I also want to remind everyone, go over to trek.fm/TNV51 or look up Trek News and Views on iTunes for Colin's excellent recap of Destination Star Trek London. And you'll also find all the other great shows, articles, and games, and wallpapers, and polls, and everything else you can imagine Star Trek on the site. All right, Char, it's time to get everyone out of here. I'm going to go off and try on my new mask collection. I just heard the doorbell, and I think my creepier masks have arrived.
Ooh, well, that sounds fantastic. I think it's time to stick a keyboard in it, because the Ready Room is done. You hear the cat?
Did I hear a cat?
Yeah, did you hear my cat? He's meowing right by the door.
No, I didn't.
Okay, good.
Does he want to be in the outro?
He might want to join us for the outro, yes. Greg Unit is coming back as a cat. I don't know.
A cat drunk on vodka.
That too.